Welcome to the Frontline Herbalism Podcast with your host Nicole Rose from the Solidarity Apothecary. This is your place for all things plants and liberation. Let's get started.
Hello, welcome back to the Frontline Herbalism Podcast. I hope you are well. My baby seems to be enjoying waking up at 4:30 in the morning at the moment, so I'm a little bit tired. Good job I have an early morning constitution. Otherwise, I think parenthood would be a real challenge. I've just got a few announcements and then I'm going to dive into like how do you choose a plant to work with? Like, where do you start? Just a couple of things before then. One of them is there are these fucking beautiful calendars for sale with just the most amazing artwork and lino prints, which kind of each tell a story of like prison resistance and solidarity. And some people have put them together to fundraise for Bristol Anarchist Black Cross, which are kind of like a prisoner support anarchist group in Bristol. All the money goes towards kind of like super practical prisoner solidarity things, visits, legal costs, post-release support and stuff. They're sliding scale, £11 to £15. And I'll put the link in the show notes. It's Stolen Skies Calendar 2026.bigcartel.com. I fucking went to Bristol Anarchist Book Fair this weekend, which was awesome, with my baby, and mostly hung out in the kids' space, but the kids' space was like fucking incredible, and there was like a literal soft play in there. So Lee just had an absolute ball. And I got to see one of my besties, Amani. I don't know if she listens to this show. So it was really nice and got to see some other comrades. But I fucking forgot to pick up a copy of the calendar because I wanted to make some like reels and all that jazz. But yeah, please get one. I think there's maybe like, I'm not sure how many are left, but yeah, please order one. Get one for your friends, a little kind of anarchist Christmas present. All the money raised, like I said, goes to Bristol ABC and is, yeah, really important as a project. So check that out. I'm also really excited to share that I finally put the Prisoner's Herbal on my website, the translation into Romanian. And I shared a text from the small collective who translated the book about, why they decided to translate it, about kind of prisons in Romania and repression. It's an ebook, so it's £3, the same as all my other books, apart from Herbalism and State Violence, which is £6. But all the proceeds go towards distributing Prisoner's Herbal to people in prison all over the world. And there's like 3,000 of them at the moment in the so-called US getting distributed, and another 1,000 in the UK. So actually, no, I think there's 2,000 in the US and 1,000 more in the UK. But anyway, they all fucking get into prisons and I need to get better at documenting this because I think it's fucking awesome how much in demand the book is and I need to kind of get a new wave of prisoner testimonials and stuff. Anyway, please check out the post by the crew. They also organized, the translation grew out of a gathering that was in Romania about plants, mushrooms and resistance. I mean, how sexy are those three things, which I would have loved to have gone to like pre-baby. I need to get my confidence. If anyone wants to go to gatherings next year and help with childcare so that I can join in things, I would just be so fucking up for that. Like, yeah, I'm going to get out of my comfort zone next year. I mean, Lee was teeny tiny this year and last year. So yeah, but I would love to get to kind of more gatherings like that. So anyway, check it out on the store. And thanks again to the amazing team who did that translation. The final announcement is, on the 24th of November is the inquest of my best friend Taylor, who died, who I have talked about several times in different episodes. Like, I think I recorded a statement after he died, which is also on the Bristol ABC website. And I shared in like an episode about herbal support for grief, and I wrote about him in my burnout book. And yeah, he was like my best friend who did 14 years in prison. He only got sentenced to 4 years and did a decade over his tariff in this IPP sentence, which is like called imprisonment for public protection. It was a thing in the mid-2000s where like thousands of people got sentenced to basically a life sentence for like a minor crime, like literally like 12 months for stealing a phone and then doing like 11 years in prison, for example. And you had to like apply for parole to get out, but loads of IPP prisoners kept getting rejected at parole, and you know, like all the things, like really leading to like at one point the UK had like the highest rate of prisoner suicides in the world of countries that were documenting prisoner suicides, and this was like pretty much attributed to the sentence. So yeah, Taylor died in 2022. Yeah, cut his throat and bled to death in prison, and yeah, was fucking harrowing. And we've got this inquest for 3 weeks, which I'm fucking dreading. It's been huge amounts of work, like writing my statement and reading all the disclosure, and I'm still not even like 5% into the paperwork. And it's, you know, it's why I haven't been supporting that many people one-to-one, because I've been preparing for this inquest. And yeah, I don't even know how it's going to work with the baby. Like, I've got the grandmas and my partner on standby in terms of looking after him. But yeah, I'm not looking forward to it. But some comrades from Bristol ABC have put together a call for action, which I really appreciate, for like a month of solidarity for Taylor. So rather than people going to the inquest, I mean, you're obviously welcome to, the group are kind of encouraging people to take action where they are. So maybe I'll just read a little bit of the statement. Yeah. Okay. I'll just read the statement quickly, and I'll put a link in the show notes. So Taylor was a working class trans man who spent 14 years in prison on an IPP sentence, a sentence with no fixed end date. He was originally given 4 years, but the system kept him trapped indefinitely. Like so many other serving IPPs, the uncertainty and violence of imprisonment destroyed his mental health. In July 2022, Taylor took his own life in his cell after years of state neglect and despair. The system that kept him caged and hopeless is the system that killed him. Taylor was a loved comrade of Bristol Anarchist Black Cross, a member of the Incarcerated Workers Organising Committee, IWOC, and part of a global network of people resisting the brutality of the prison system. Why now? On Monday, 24th November, an inquest will begin into Taylor's death. We know what the state's process will deliver, reports, recommendations, and no real change. We don't believe the system that killed Taylor can deliver quote-unquote justice. Instead, we ask people everywhere to use this time to organise, connect, and show that solidarity is stronger than the walls that divide us. Call to action. From 24th of November to 12th of December, we invite comrades, friends and allies to take action in Taylor's name wherever you are. Honour his life by standing with everyone still living under the same violent system. Here's how you can act. Support people inside, write letters, donate to phone and visit funds, send books and stand with prisoners facing daily harm, especially trans and queer prisoners like Taylor. Challenge the IPP sentence. Amplify prisoner and family campaigns. Demand that all IPPs be reviewed and ended. Organise locally, host a letter writing night, hold a banner drop or gather your community for a discussion or vigil. Show up for families, offer practical and emotional support to those whose loved ones are in prison. They carry the weight of this system too. Build lasting solidarity, connect with abolitionists and working class groups, make relationships that can outlast moments of tragedy. Every act matters, big or small. Taylor taught us what solidarity really means, showing up again and again, even when it's hard. His life reminds us that abolition isn't theory, it is life and death. This month, we take action for Taylor, for all our kin inside, and for a future without cages. Reports, reflections, and actions can be shared at bristol_abc@riseup.net. And yeah, please just share that call of action with people you know. Like, I put it on Instagram, but like, fucking no one sees Instagram anymore, at least not mine. So yeah, if you can share it around, that would be amazing. And yeah, the court is like 10 till 4 pretty much every day for 3 weeks. So I'm not sort of expecting to be able to do like podcasts particularly. So there might be a little bit of a podcast break, but I'll see how I get on. I might be able to batch record some things beforehand. All right. So yeah, please check that out. I'll put the link in the show notes. Please order a calendar. And yeah, I hope you get something out of this episode around choosing a plant to work with. Okay, thanks for listening. Take care. Whoa. All right. So yeah, I'm going to focus on how do we kind of choose a plant to work with, or, you know, allow a plant to choose us. And anyone that comes on my practical medicine making intensives, which FYI are ready to book at the moment, it just becomes a running joke that like every question is responded to, well, it depends, you know, it depends on the person, the constitution, the plant, their lineages, like all the things. And yeah, sometimes I wish herbalism was like a little bit more straightforward, but I also love the kind of complexity of it. So yeah, in this episode, I'm going to kind of focus on nervines, which are herbs with an affinity for the nervous system, just to give you a kind of like tangible example to work through. But obviously, you might want to choose a plant to work with another sort of system, like most especially, for example, focusing on your digestive system or your immune system or, you know, your pelvic area or reproductive system. Like, yeah, not that any of these systems are separate from the other. And that's, you know, the other element of complexity with medicine. But yeah, I'm just going to try and keep it as simple as possible. And it is going to be a bit wibbity wobbity. So we're going to kind of like bounce around a little bit and come back to different themes and things. But yeah, I'm going to do my best. But yeah, you're often wondering like, where do I begin? And there's lots of starting points. And I think my sort of favorite is by what is our kind of desired herbal action. So a herbal action is often just kind of like describing its action on the body or its kind of like medicinal property. So are you looking for something stimulating? Are you looking for something calming? Are you looking for something like toning of a particular tissue? Are you looking for something that is kind of relaxing and is going to relieve cramps? So, you know, it can be hard to get your head around like herbal kind of jargon around different medicinal actions. But just to keep it simple for yourself, it's kind of like, what kind of action am I seeking? And if you don't know that herbal jargon, like, how do you want to feel differently? You know, and if you're thinking about a kind of nervous system perspective, then like, what sort of state of my nervous system do I want to shift? And maybe, you know, maybe you listened to the previous episodes where I dived into different nervous system states, and I would really recommend listening to them if you're in this process of kind of choosing a plant. But it might be you've listened to that and you've been like, you know what, I'm really in the freeze response a lot. Like, I'm really on the edge of a panic attack a lot, or just kind of like immobilized with sort of dissociation. Or you might be more in like fight or flight and have really like intense racing anxiety and anger and irritability, in which case you might want to, you know, feel differently. You might want to feel like some of the ways kind of like clients or people I've worked with one-to-one might describe it is like, oh, I just want to feel calmer. I just want to feel in control. I just want to feel less reactive. You know, I just want to feel safer. Like, you know, think about what do you really want to kind of like achieve, not in a like, oh, I got a fucking A grade assignment, but achieve in the sense of like, how do you want to feel differently? So yeah, and if you know that kind of herbal action, you can obviously get a bit more specific. So yeah, if you're feeling sort of anxious and in this sort of flight mode, you might choose like a relaxant nervine like lavender or lemon balm or chamomile, for example. If you're, you know, really struggling to sleep, you might be looking for a kind of like mild sedative or a stronger sedative. So you might be thinking like California poppy or passion flower or wild lettuce. If you're feeling sort of shut down or hopeless, you might think, actually, I need something a little bit more stimulating for my nervous system, like rosemary or thyme, for example. So yeah, like, it is, yeah, just kind of thinking, yeah, what kind of, yeah, how do you want to feel differently? Like, for example, if you're really struggling with kind of burnout after long-term stress, you might think like, actually, I just want my nervous system to kind of like function a bit better and to feel more sort of like resourced and less fatigued. So you might choose a kind of nerve tonic like milky oats or betony or licorice. And I did actually a series, if you're on Instagram, all about nerve tonics in my last sort of PTSD course launch. So yeah, I will try and record a podcast about nerve tonics too. But anyway, so that doesn't sound too complicated, right? Like, I'm just going for the kind of herbal action that I'm looking for. Like, I want an antiviral action, or I want something calming on my stomach cramps. But yeah, there are obviously lots of other things you need to think about. First off, really, is about safety. So in a way, like, I like to start with safety because it just rules out often like a bunch of plants. So you know, this word is used in the herbal world of like contraindications, like is something not indicated for what you are using or not using. So for example, medications, like if someone is on certain medications and, you know, not looking to kind of transition off them, which is often a goal for people connecting with a herbalist, is they want sort of like a practitioner to support them with a transition like that. But say, you know, right, I'm, you know, I've chosen the contraceptive pill. I'm happy with that choice. Like, I'm not going to come off it. Like, and I'm obviously not against pharmaceuticals. Like, you know, they can be fucking life-saving. So I'm very happy if someone is just like content with the medication they're taking. But knowing that medication means, right, okay, well, you're not going to have any St. John's wort, or licorice might be a bad idea, or, you know, lemon balm might, I mean, lemon balm's like pretty amazing and safe with all sorts of things. But yeah, medications can help really rule out if a plant is safe for you. So always kind of check that before you work with a plant. Just, you know, have a quick Google, ask a herbalist friend, look in a good high quality herbal book and see if there's any medications that are not sort of suitable for that plant. You might be pregnant. And, you know, like herbal safety in pregnancy is like a whole other episode, but especially in early pregnancy, we have to be very, very cautious. If you are a herbalist yourself, like I was like a little bit more confident because I have such a deep kind of intimate knowledge of certain plants. But if I'm working with a client, like I always, you know, you just have to go like to a real kind of like harm prevention, like covering your own back kind of thing. So yeah, just, you know, checking if that herb is safe. And then there's contraindications in terms of things like specific symptoms you might be experiencing. So I've written about this before, but you know, there's like a whole bunch of herbs that I think I don't feel are like are kind of contraindicated with like certain kind of subtypes of PTSD, if that makes sense. So if someone is like extremely activated in fight or flight and having a lot of like nightmares and like attacks of rage and stuff like that, like I'm just not going to give them like rhodiola or ashwagandha or, you know, maybe even like licorice or something, because it might just completely tip them over the edge. Likewise, if someone is very kind of depressed and sort of stagnant and sedated in themselves, like very fatigued, I'm not going to give them sedative herbs. But then there's always like nuances with that as well. You know, someone might be very fatigued, but actually have a lot of like underlying anxiety and activation. So anyway, or be struggling with sleep, like nighttime sleep, for example. So yeah, but I like to really think about kind of, yeah, any kind of other contraindications like that. And this is when like sort of herbal energetics come in. I told you this episode would be a bit complicated, but yeah, I've got a lesson in the Herbalism PTSD and Traumatic Stress course that's like a deep dive into herbal energetics. And, you know, like traditional medicine models, like from all over the world, all follow like an energetic pattern. And it is very important in terms of kind of more like traditional medicine to like think about energetics. So to make it really simple, just think about temperature, for example. Like, do you tend to run hot as a person, or do you tend to run cold? So for example, I'm quite warm. I don't like wearing socks. I don't like sleeping in many clothes. I am generally like, you know, like when we work with the clinic in Calais, like most of my teammates really struggle with the cold. They struggle to open dressings and bandages and stuff. And I will just be happy as Larry in a hoodie, like working in the cold. But put me in the bloody heat in the summer with the clinic, I ain't doing that. Like, I just get sunstroke and sit in the back. Like, all the teammates will sit and do like bottling and labeling like in the sun, and I'm just in the shade. So yeah, so like, you know, do you tend to run hot or cold? Because herbs, will have a kind of like temperature to them. And some are like quite neutral, but yeah, some may kind of like be more heating for the body and some may be more cooling, for example. And I think herbal energetics is often like the missing link for people who have kind of like done the DIY, like self-experimenting with herbs, because they're often like, but hey, like every, you know, like every herbal textbook is saying, you know, this plant is like really good for this, this, and this. And then they don't realize that like actually they're all really like cold, you know, like vervain and betony, like they're quite cold, cooling nervines. And again, someone just might need like a bit more warming up, like some turmeric or ginger or, you know, rosemary or something. So yeah, like trying to think about your constitution is really good. And we also often need to think about like our kind of like moisture. So I feel like I'm quite kind of balanced these days, but I used to be like extremely tense and dry. So like anything that was like too drying was just like a fucking nightmare for me. And other people are just way too sort of like moist, you know, they might have a lot of kind of like GI issues or, you know, cysts or hemorrhoids or like things like this, or like a lot of kind of like nasally dampness. And then herbs that are kind of moistening, like marshmallow, for example, just might be too moistening for them. So they might actually need that kind of like drying, toning action. I hope this is making sense and not making things too complicated. But yeah, have a think about energetics when you're, you know, really considering what herb you might work with. And this is a bit like, not controversial, but like, you know, maybe if you are a really hot person, take a fucking hot herb to see how it feels in your body and to be like, whoa, that was heating. Because we can't sort of, you know, like we have to develop an intimate relationship with all sorts of plants. And the best way of doing that is knowing their kind of effects on our bodies. And sometimes you actually learn, like, I feel like I learned way more about energetics from the herbs that were like contraindicated for me. So I'm not saying go and choose every herb that's not recommended for you, especially if you're in a real state of imbalance or, excuse me, or chronic illness or like disease. But like if you're just kind of like learning about herbalism and wanting to understand herbal energetics, then there's nothing better than just doing a tea tasting or a tincture tasting and just, you know, trying it, which again is something I love doing on my practical medicine making intensives, because people get to just try like shitloads of samples and, you know, they'll take a shot of elecampane glycerite and some people will be like, holy moly, no way, like I need to drink like 3 glasses of water otherwise. And other people are like, oh, that's just what I needed after sleeping in a damp tent last night. So yeah, like I think it's really nice to like be playful and experimental with herbalism. Okay, so the next, like, well, again, this isn't linear, right? Like I would always consider this like first off, but I would be really thinking about sort of like relationship and reciprocity. So is this plant growing in your bioregion, for example? You know, like I'm not against, like I think people have traded herbs and spices from all over the world, like, you know, forever. Like there's like a kind of anti-capitalist business coach, Bear Herbert, who, sorry if I've mispronounced their name wrong, but they talk about the differences between like commerce and capitalism in terms of like trade and sort of buying and selling and exchanging versus, you know, intense economic systems built on domination and oppression. But yeah, so I think, you know, we have been working with different herbs from different bioregions for a really long time, especially places like fucking England, you know, where, you know, you're invaded by the bloody Romans. So you've got all these like amazing herbs from the Mediterranean and North Africa and South Asia. And then, you know, it's kind of like what counts as a native herb. Do you know what I mean? Like it's all complicated stuff. And I talk about it in my Herbalism, PTSD and Traumatic Stress course. Because, you know, I obviously also talk about cultural appropriation and when is it inappropriate to work with a herb. And certain herbs are extremely sacred to different groups of Indigenous people and are not appropriate for other people to use. And I think it's different working with a plant, I think, for yourself than it is I'm going to fucking commodify and market this herb and make like millions of pounds from selling it all over the world and over harvesting it and pushing it to absolute ecological devastation. Like, there's a fucking difference, you know? But I do feel like plant medicines are sort of deeper and richer and stronger and act on more than just a biochemical level when we have a kind of lineage with that herb or like a tradition with that herb. So my ancestors are from like England, Wales and Ireland, and I studied in Ireland, and I felt like having that kind of like Irish plant knowledge and folklore and stuff was like really fucking beautiful and healing for me. Because of, you know, relatives like migrating to England because of like fucking poverty and English oppression. Likewise, I've loved learning about like the physicians of Madaffy, for example. Like one of my nans is from Anglesey in North Wales, and like I've really loved learning about kind of like more like Welsh traditions with herbs. And obviously, like a lot of these herbal traditions have been like completely fucking obliterated, right, through colonialism and the birth of capitalism, and you know, like its impacts on medicine and on folklore and on relationships to land base. Like all the things. But yeah, like I think if you are able to connect with a herb from your own lineages, like that's really powerful. And that, I think that's like especially powerful for people living, for example, I've, you know, supported a lot of clients who have lineages away from England, Wales and Ireland and living, you know, in the diaspora here. And it's fucking powerful for them to connect with a herb from, you know, Bangladesh or Sri Lanka or, you know, wherever. So it's like, yeah, I think if you can connect with a herb with that ancestral connection, like you're just going to be bringing in like so much more sort of like magic and energy. Do you know what I mean? I ain't fucking afraid to say that shit on my podcast. Sorry, you know what people are like with the M word. Right. Anyway, okay, so yeah. And then is it just ethical and ecological to harvest that herb? Like, is that herb really, you know, endangered? In which case, please don't fucking work with it. Like, there's all sorts of herbs that share similar properties and actions. Like, we don't have to push herbs to fucking extinction, you know? And there's an organization in the so-called US called United Plant Savers that kind of document at-risk medicinal plants, mostly for so-called kind of North America, but they also share links to other organizations. There's one in the UK called Plant Life International that talk about sort of like plant biodiversity and which plants are threatened on these islands where we are. So yeah, I think it's important to kind of, you know, check that sustainability of that herb. And if in doubt, just work with a herb that's really fucking abundant, like for where you are. Like, there's fucking nettles everywhere and dandelions everywhere, and you know, like where I live, every hedgerow has like bloody 50 hawthorn trees. So for me, it's like those plants are like in abundance where I am, and so it makes sense to work with them, which is, you know, probably why I've like got, you know, certain herbs in my apothecary that are kind of, you know, like very rooted in my land base here and what I can harvest and things. But yeah, like if you are buying a herb or a tincture, which, you know, you have to fucking do, like I didn't fucking grow up with access to land. You know what I mean? Like, I know how it is growing up in a city. So, you know, you do have to buy herbs, and hopefully you've got some sort of local herbalist that you can get them from. But if not, I know, you know, buying them from suppliers like Baldwin's and things. But yeah, trying to choose them from a supplier where there's like some kind of integrity is nice. Like, I understand, like I've been there fucking shoplifting from Holland and Barrett, you know, just to have access to certain plants and things. But I do think you'll realize, like, when you receive medicines that are kind of handmade and ecologically harvested with like a kind of spiritual intent, like you will feel the difference in that medicine. And I've had that feedback so much. Okay, so we're still not there with choosing a plant. But the other things you might want to explore are like, what's the best sort of preparation? Like, some herbs are most effective, for example, in alcohol tincture, and that might not be like appropriate for you. So you might think, okay, I'm fucking rubbish at taking tinctures. But I love a cup of tea in the morning. So you might think, right, what plant's good to work with in terms of like a herbal tea blend, or, you know, a glycerite. Like, I've got a whole online workshop all about glycerite. So if you're like, what the fuck is a glycerite? But yeah, some plants definitely lend themselves more to kind of glycerin, in my experience. You know, you might need to think about like what sort of dose or duration are safe. Like if you're working with a certain herb that might be on the more like pokey end of things, it might be that you can only work with that plant super short term, you know, or like licorice for something. For example, you don't want to take licorice long term. You might just want to work with it for like 6 weeks, and you might just want a tiny little bit as part of a blend rather than on its own. So yeah, I know there's like a lot to think about. But yeah, you might want to also think like, are you taking this herb as part of a formula or just on its own? Like, I love promoting to people to just begin with one plant, and I love layering different herbs into tinctures and formulas. Like, once I've got a relationship with a herb, but you know, like maybe that's not true for clients, because I will often go for sort of formulas, but that's because their goal is like to really like, you know, support a shift in their body or their nervous system or their digestion or whatever. Whereas I feel like if your focus is on like learning herbalism and connecting with a plant, then going plant by plant is really amazing. And I've got an episode of like plant ally practices from when I recorded the Prisoner's Herbal book. I'll put it in the show notes. It was fucking ages ago. But yeah, like working with that one plant in different preparations, like for example, having hawthorn berries and making hawthorn berry glycerite and making a tincture and trying hawthorn flower tea, like you're just, yeah, you're going to be experiencing that herb on so many levels and being able to like reflect and yeah, kind of have that embodied experience with that herb is like fucking amazing. So yeah, so there are lots of things to consider. But the final thing that I think makes it all easier is like, is there a herb that is just fucking choosing you? Like, is there a plant that just keeps appearing in your awareness? You know, like everywhere you go, you're seeing dandelion leaves everywhere and you have that craving to eat them, or you're having dreams about dandelion, or someone gives you a book with a dandelion on it, like the Prisoner's Herbal, for example, it's got dandelions on it. Or yeah, you're having a dream with dandelions in. Like, is there a herb that your sort of reticular activating system of your brain is just focused on? You know, you just cannot ignore those signs anymore. Then just fucking go for that. You know, like when I had costochondritis, which is like chronic inflammation in the rib cage, I had a dream where I was taken down a lift and gone into a supermarket. And there were shelves and shelves of herbs. So it wasn't like, oh, find this herb in the forest. It was like some sort of like weird, massive herb store. And I went and I chose comfrey, which, you know, isn't recommended to take inside because of its like potential risk to the liver. That's like a whole other episode. But I did start working with like comfrey poultices on my rib cage. And that was definitely like beneficial for me in that moment of my kind of recovery process. So yeah, like paying attention. Oh my God, sorry, this dog is so noisy. Paying attention to those signs and which herb is kind of choosing you. So yeah, I know all of that is probably really overwhelming, which is why I really encourage people to join like a structured learning program, like my Herbalism PTSD Traumatic Stress course, for example, that can take you through those things step by step, or present to you a plant profile where I've already dived into a herb's energetics or the contraindications, for example. But I guess like the other response to this question is just like fucking start anywhere. Like just start. Do you know what I mean? Like it's all very well kind of like reading herbal books or listening to podcasts, but like the real like transformational effect from a herb is literally just working with a herb. Like I can guarantee it, like just going and picking some dandelion leaves and eating them with your lunch will just get you so far in terms of, you know, connecting with that plant. And then you can, you know, dive into all the things and read online about them and listen to podcasts and watch YouTube videos and all the stuff. But yeah, just kind of, yeah, I know I'm recording this in the winter where it's like hard to harvest herbs, but yeah, like, you know, just order a tincture online and start with a few drops a day and see how you get on. So yeah, so that's my advice on how to choose a plant to work with. Maybe I'll just do a little recap, because that was a lot. So think about your desired kind of herbal action, like how do you want to feel differently? Think about contraindications, have a think about energetics, like is it too warming or cooling? Is the herb growing in your bioregion? Is it sort of safe and ethical to harvest it? You know, does the plant have a relationship to your traditions? Think about safety in terms of dose and duration, whether you take it as a formula or on its own, and what's the best preparation of that herb. All right. So yeah, let me know how you get on, and thanks for listening.
Thanks so much for listening to the Frontline Herbalism podcast. You can find the transcript, the links, all the resources from the show at solidarityapothecary.org/podcast.